Hey y'all, Rob here. I just want to chime in really quickly before we jump into this episode. I have a few openings in my new executive coaching business, Trepidnaw Consulting. I work with business owners, primarily landscapers, to help them scale, systemize, and get their lives back. If you want to learn more, check out the website, robtrepidnaw.com. Thanks.
There is something inside of us. There is our hardwiring. We want to, you know, feel like we matter. We want to actually be able to show up at our jobs every day and feel like, hey, if I didn't show up, it would matter. We want our lives to matter. And I think that comes from a very healthy and natural place. The problem becomes when we feel that, we feel, you know, maybe a little bit invisible, but the spotlight mindset kicks in and it starts to tell us, you need to get the credit. Like other people are getting the promotion. That's because people don't know how amazing you are. So you need to remind them how amazing you are.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Adventure Cure Podcast. I'm your host and fellow sojourner, Rob Trepidnaw. Our aim here is to provide painfully raw stories of self-discovery and tools for more meaningful living. We will be hearing from incredibly brave people who have overcome impossible odds, set out on worthy causes, or have tools to share with us on better ways to live. I created this podcast because for much of my life, I've kept coming to a similar place that beckoned me to ask, is this it? I'm willing to bet you've been to that place as well. Some of you by way of endless survival, others muted by the monotony of boredom, as some of you have achieved ridiculous success by most standards, but still feel like there's got to be more. If you checked any of these boxes, or you're simply wanting to be part of a bigger story, keep listening. Now, a bit of housekeeping before we get rolling. Don't forget to tick that subscribe or follow button wherever you listen to podcasts, and also follow us on Instagram at The Adventure Cure to keep updated. All right, I'll see y'all on the other side. Let's dive in. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode number 18 of The Adventure Cure Podcast. Tell me this, do you ever get caught in a cycle where you start telling yourself, you know, I really deserve more credit than I'm getting. I should be the one getting that promotion. I should be the one on stage. I know I certainly have, plenty of times. There's a tension that I think we need to live in where we have aspirations and goals and dreams, but also at the same time where we find contentment where we are and somehow can exit the hamster wheel of chasing an endless idea of success. Today's guest is an expert on this tension and has some excellent advice for us. Today we'll be hearing from a new friend of mine, author Tim Scher. For 10 years, Tim worked alongside Donna Miller as his COO, helping him launch and build the incredibly successful company, StoryBrand. And now, he's taken the lessons he's learned through working under numerous incredible leaders, including, of course, Don, but also Tim Cook at Apple and the founder of Tom's, and written a book to teach us a bit more about what he calls the secret society of success. All right, let's go meet him. Well, Tim Scher, welcome to the Adventure Cure Podcast. Thanks for being here.
Oh, man, I'm so excited. Thanks for having me.
It's great to connect with you. You know, I saw on sort of a book release website that your book was coming out, The Secret Society of Success, and I really wanted to talk with you about it, and I'm holding the advanced reader's copy right here. I finished it this morning, and I'm still really giddy about it, and so I'm really pumped to have you here to discuss it, your debut book, and it's going to be a hit. I can guarantee that. So, Tim, what I'd like for you to do is just kind of just tee this thing up a little bit and tell me what exactly is this about. Give me kind of an opener and then we'll just kind of dive into different pieces of it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, you know, a story I love is the story of Apollo 11. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with it. So Apollo 11, the story I really love. So many people are probably familiar with it. You have Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, you know, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. But what a lot of people don't know, there's actually a third astronaut on that mission, and his name was Michael Collins. So here you have Michael Collins, the guy Ubers Neil and Buzz to the moon, drops them off so that they can do the various tasks that they have to do on the moon, while he, back in the command module, orbits the moon something like 26 times until these guys are ready to be picked up and brought back to Earth. And what would make this a pretty miserable story from my perspective would be if he were to get back and sit down with the press and say something like, well, it sure would have been nice to actually walk on the moon, you know, acted like a victim in some way, tried to steal the spotlight away from the mission as a whole. But what's beautiful is he didn't respond that way. In fact, he talked about how content he was to have had one of the three seats. Like he was happy to be a part of the team. And it's interesting to me that in the world that we operate in, the world that we live in today, says to be successful, We have to step into the spotlight, climb the ladder, be the boss, chase whatever version of success that's been dangled in front of us. And, you know, for me, as I've been on this journey over the last, 15 years, really navigating my life and career and trying to figure out what it is that I want that to look like, I've been inspired by a lot of people that have just shown me a new way to define success. And so people like Michael Collins, they're in what I call the secret society of success. And it's people who just chosen to live a little bit differently, who have kind of taught me to maybe not pay so much attention to all the noise that we're hearing about, that success is only money, fame, power. There's something about that that just doesn't sit right with me. And I'm sure that's true for a lot of other people listening as well. So if we're not to live that way, how then should we live? And so really this book is a bit of an exploration and me kind of saying, guys, I think we need to redefine success. And I have a few ideas that I want to share, and it's ideas that I've learned from people who have been really inspiring to me.
That's really well said. And it's a really refreshing take that you have. I mean, the subtitle here is Stop Chasing the Spotlight and Learn to Enjoy Your Work and Life Again. And I think part of the reason it appealed so much to me is, I mean, I'm an Enneagram number 3. Okay. So I know, and anybody listening out there who's a 3, I know all about the spotlight. And I'm a business owner, but the spotlight has definitely been sort of the shiny object out there, and how I define success is constantly changing, and it can create a lot of problems if it's in the wrong place. And so that subtitle really tugged at me, and is the reason that I opened this book, and it really drew me in. And honestly, I mean, it seems like there's a secret society, then the contrast would be the spotlight mindset, right? Is that the opposite of the secret society?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. And we're kind of living in the tension between those two things for sure.
Yeah. And the spotlight mindset is really exhausting, but it seems as if it's what everyone's chasing. Can we talk a little bit more about what the spotlight mindset is and kind of how that plays out in our lives?
So, I define the spotlight mindset as an unhealthy desire for attention and recognition. So the spotlight mindset is that thing that is comparing what we have against, other people. The spotlight mindset has a striving after, next or something that we don't quite have yet. But another symptom of the spotlight mindset may be something like, damaged relationships. And what I mean by that is maybe some of the things that you're chasing is getting in the way of some other things that are really important in your life, like relationships. And a really good example of this, there's a guy named Michael Hyatt, who I've actually been really inspired by. And, he has a book and talks about, a kind of a failure story for him. He had an opportunity to run a business, and there's at this particular publisher, a book publisher, Thomas Nelson, there were 14 different imprints, kind of almost 14 different brands, if you will, under that umbrella. And at the time, Nelson Books was dead last in all the, significant categories, revenue, performance, team morale, just at the bottom. So Michael was given the opportunity to step in and lead that, and told the CEO at the time, hey, give me 3 years and I'll turn this thing around. Well, in 18 months, Nelson Books became number one. They were at the top of revenue and team morale and all these things. So here, Michael, his reward for that is not only a job well done, but he was walking home with the biggest bonus check that he'd ever received in his life. And, in fact, he says it was higher than his annual salary. So his wife's his number one fan. He's like, she's going to be thrilled. Just couldn't wait to get home and, shared the news with her. And he gets home and his wife says, we need to talk. And his heart sinks. And she goes on to say, to him with tears in her eyes, your 5 daughters need you now more than ever. And honestly, I feel like a single parent. Ugh, right? That's painful. So much success at work, but then to realize that his relationships were suffering as a result of it. And not only just in a relationship, the people he cared about the most, his wife and his daughters. So there's this narrative that says, success looks like growing a business, leading in revenue, whatever, right? There's just all these messages that say that. But if we're not careful, if we're not mindful of the spotlight mindset and where it can start to take over in our lives, there is an opportunity for it to start to impact us in really negative ways. And so Michael fortunately was able to use that experience as a learning experience. And he started to redefine what success looks like for him. And in fact, he now is leading and teaching people how to win at work and at life, right? So, you know, for us, though, the spotlight mindset can look a lot of different ways. And it's important for us to identify these moments so that we can be self-aware, because without that self-awareness, we're not going to even know what it is that needs to be fixed.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you. And one thing that you really went big on in the book is talking about this desire for recognition and for credit and like the recognition gap. Can we talk a little bit about that and what that looks like in the workplace?
Yeah. So we had this guy on our podcast when I was working at StoryBrand, and the guy's name's Dan Heath. And he talked about how they did this study. And, you know, it says here, do you frequently recognize your direct reports for the work they've done and honor them for that work? Dan says 80% of the people said, yeah, I do that. But then when they asked the direct reports, do your managers frequently recognize you for the work you've done? 20% of them say yes. So he calls that the recognition gap. Then what's interesting about this is, you know, so much of our work goes unrecognized and unnoticed. If you think about a concert, I was actually at a concert at the Ryman Auditorium, which is not too far from my house here in Nashville, and I love going to shows there. And there was a time in this concert where the lead singer was playing guitar, standing center stage. For the next song, he jumped back to a piano, which moved him a little bit further back on the stage. And the guy running the spotlight lost him. And anybody in the audience can just see, I mean, it's like circle eights, you know, figure eights. This guy's just clearly lost, you know, with the spotlight. And the lead singer calls him out, gotta stay with me, bro. And, you know, kind of was a joke and everyone's laughing, having fun. But I just thought, isn't it interesting that if that guy running the spotlight's doing his job well, nobody notices. And in fact, in a lot of ways, he becomes invisible. So for so many of us, the result of us doing a job well is we become invisible. But the problem that this creates is if people don't know all that you're doing each and every day, they're not able to recognize you for that work. And then that lack of recognition can lead to people feeling, you know, like they're not valued. And I think we all need a little recognition to feel valued. And so there is something inside of us. There is a, you know, our hardwiring. We want to, you know, feel like we matter. We want to actually be able to show up at our jobs every day and feel like, hey, if I didn't show up, it would matter. We want our lives to matter. And I think that comes from a very healthy and natural place. The problem becomes when we feel that, we feel, you know, maybe a little bit invisible, but the spotlight mindset kicks in and it starts to tell us, you need to get the credit. Like other people are getting the promotion. That's because people don't know how amazing you are. So you need to remind them how amazing you are, right? And so it has us taking the credit for things. It has us, you know, talking only about our success and really just setting ourselves up to win, but not kind of operating from this kind of humility or this humble posture. And, you know, somebody who actually does a really good job in a healthy way of you know, operating and leading in this space is Tim Cook. So here's the CEO of Apple. And before he was CEO of Apple, he was COO under Steve Jobs, right? So Steve Jobs passes away. The person who had been groomed for that role is Tim Cook. So they're at the release of the Apple Watch, which, you know, Apple had released other iPhones and other computers in Tim's tenure as CEO, but this was the first new product in a new category that Apple had released since Steve Jobs had passed. So Tim Cook's on national television and he's asked by David Muir, he says, is this the moment for you, the moment of your career at Apple? And you just think about how you would respond if you're Tim Cook. Here you've been operating in this environment for a couple of decades. In a lot of ways, you've been invisible. You know, in a lot of ways, you know that you've contributed like crazy. So you would probably want to let people know that, right? This is your time to shine, your moment in the spotlight, your opportunity to let people know this is like you are the man for the job to lead them into the next era. But what Tim Cook responds with when he's asked, is this the moment for you, the moment of your career at Apple? He says, well, it's a moment for Apple. I don't really think about myself that much. That is learning to live in the way of a secret society. That actually is an amount of you know, humble confidence, right? He's confident in his contribution. He knows the value that he brought, but he doesn't have to remind everybody about it. And in fact, he used that moment in the spotlight to shine a spotlight on other people. Because to launch an Apple Watch takes, what, hundreds, if not thousands of people, you know? So for Tim to try to take the credit for that would be insane. But he didn't take the bait, right? And in fact, he used it to shine a spotlight on others. So learning to live in the way of the secret society, starting to define success in the same way that they do, looks like being somebody who's willing to do the work, whether or not you'll ever get the credit for it. But not only that, recognizing people who are doing work behind the scenes, making it a point to call that out, and then also being willing to kind of give credit and recognition to, you know, other people, maybe when it's being directed to you.
Sure. Yeah. It sounds like, I mean, a society that we all should be in. So how do we get inducted? I mean, tell me the three steps to solve all of these problems. And how do we become a member of the secret society?
Man, you know, it's kind of like exercising in that, you know, there's not a single day that you, you know, show up and you're like, you know, I've done all the exercising I need to do. I did it, right? It's like there is this need for us to maintain health. We have to put in the work time and time again. We have to make decisions throughout our days to, you know, keep us heading towards health. And I think that learning to live in the secret society is a lot of that, because there's still days often, you know, like later this afternoon, I'm sure there's going to be a moment when I'm tempted to take the bait and, you know, lean in towards the spotlight mindset versus, you know, living in the way of the secret society. So I wish I could give you the three steps, but I'm so sorry to tell you, this is a tension that we are going to have to manage in our lives. And it's something that we're going to be up against every single day. So I think for us, you know, it looks like, you know, looking at a moment or an opportunity like Tim Cook had, and then making a choice. Your induction to the secret society is made one decision at a time. Because if you respond with like, aren't I great? Aren't I amazing? You know, leaning to that unhealthy desire for attention and recognition, that can be how you respond. And that's your choice. But also think that you have the ability to choose to give away the credit. And I think that's what it looks like there. So giving away credit, that's one kind of characteristic, a behavior that people in the secret society would kind of elicit. But another one is, you know, in the culture that we live in today, it's a consumerism space. Like we're very influenced by marketing culture, everything that's going on. And that world has us thinking and operating in a what's in it for me mindset, right? If you are listening to this and you run a business, you know that in marketing your business, if you're not presenting things through the lens of kind of what's in it for me, you know, from your customer's perspective, you're probably not going to sell many products. But that what's in it for me mindset, I think, is really leading us to a dangerous path in our, you know, society, because it has us thinking about ourselves all the time. And so as we are looking to, you know, live more intentional lives, as we're looking to lean into, you know, maybe defining success a little bit differently, I think we can learn from a guy named Andy Stanley. And I heard him speak at an event a few years ago. And the event was all around, you know, finding our purpose and living and operating from that space. So he says, you know, these kinds of questions, the, you know, what's in it for me? You know, why am I here? These are the things that he says will lead us down a destructive path. These are all very natural questions for us to ask. It almost feels like survival mechanism. We're trying to set ourselves up to win, right? But Andy says, if we're trying to find our purpose, if we're actually trying to live a little bit differently, we need to ask very different questions. And the question he says that we need to ask is, who am I here for? And that who am I here for question allows us to still have to show up and do our part, to lean into our own gifts and abilities. But it's a totally different paradigm to operate from one of, you know, more in service of others, right? And so if we were to ask, who am I here for, a little bit more often than, you know, what's in it for me. That is another way that we can start to lean in and live a little bit more in alignment with, you know, the secret society.
Sure. It's a much less exhausting way to live. I mean, it seems as if so many of us these days, and I can be guilty of this as well, are kind of all aspiring for greatness, right? We're all trying to find our 10 minutes of fame and our secret talents and our, you know, so many of us, we're vying for the attention and trying to get to the top. And it's just this exhausting rat race that never ends. And there seems like there's never any satisfaction on this journey up and to the right. But your idea of instead focusing on helping others, it's kind of like back to the old adage, it's better to give than to receive, right? I mean, this is old school wisdom that we've just kind of buried in this endless pursuit of more that seems like it's never really satisfying, right?
Yeah, I'm sure that's hard for you too as an Enneagram 3. It's just a way that threes define success is at the top, right? And it doesn't matter what level you're at, there's always another level.
Always.
And I think that there is some truth to that in other parts of our lives and, you know, in other ways, Enneagram numbers, right? But threes in particular. And I think that's the thing that we're being sold is it doesn't matter how nice your house is, there's always a nicer one. You know, the second that your kitchen just got renovated, there's somebody down the street who has a better one, you know? So if we measure ourselves against, you know, that, against comparing ourselves to others in every possible way, I agree. It doesn't stop. So, you know, how do we find contentment where we are rather than, you know, us just feeling like we're on this endless pursuit for all the things that we don't have? And, you know, this for me really started to happen when I, there was a neighborhood, my favorite neighborhood is just down the street from my house. And, the houses in this neighborhood are insane. I mean, they're mansions. They're, you know, the cheapest house you can buy in that neighborhood's $1 million, but most of them are between 2 and 3 million. If you live in Seattle, that's like a one bedroom, but you know, in other parts of the country, a $2 and $3 million house is a pretty big, crazy house, right? So I love this neighborhood. And so I just started thinking about what my life would look like as the owner of one of these houses. So just for fun, I downloaded some of these Zillow kinds of apps and was just constantly refreshing to see when houses in that neighborhood would pop up for sale. And when they would, I'd look at all the pictures and just really immerse myself and imagine what life would look like as me, an owner of one of these houses. And it was actually quite fun to daydream about. I enjoyed it. I loved looking at the pictures of all that. But what was interesting is I started to notice a shift. No longer was my house nice enough. My car wasn't nice enough. I wasn't making enough money in my current job to afford one of those houses. So therefore, there's something wrong with that, right? And it's almost every, you know, nook and cranny that I looked at in my own life, it was not enough. I needed more. And so I started to realize this. And fortunately, had this brief moment of clarity when I started to think through why exactly it was that I wanted one of those houses. And there's sometimes that me just becoming invisible, fading into the background, doing my job and not, you know, caring if people know I had a part to play in the success of the company or whatever it is that I'm into. Sometimes that's just not enough. Sometimes for me, I want to be, you know, the Neil Armstrongs, the Buzz Aldrin. I want to be the guy walking on the moon, the one that everybody's talking about. I'm not content, you know, with the Michael Collins. But as I started to think about my motivation, it really was I just wanted to appear successful to all my friends. And to appear successful, you didn't even really need to know what I did for a job. If I'm the owner of one of those houses, for you to think that I'm successful, you'd be like, I don't even know what he does, but that guy's young and he's got a house like that.
Surely, he has arrived.
Whatever he is doing is working, right?
Sure.
And so what I cared most about was not necessarily having the thing. It was more how I wanted others to perceive me and my ultimate success, right?
I know all about that.
So in that moment of, you know, clarity, I actually pivoted towards gratitude. It seems so simple, but it was really helpful for me. Because in those moments when we're wanting to compare ourselves to other people, when our mood is down, the thing that can really put us into a better headspace is gratitude. So I deleted the house searching apps. I had actually downloaded three. I deleted the house searching apps and I took a break from looking at these houses. And I started instead to think about all the things I was grateful for that I had, rather than, you know, in the weeks prior, all the things that I was wishing that I had more of. So I found that I was actually quite happy with my current house. You know, I have a wife and two kids. You know, I love our life. And, you know, so as I started to think about the car that I have, that's just fine, right? It's great. I just started to feel more content and satisfied. And that to me is the journey that we're all on, is have aspirations and chase things. To chase and want things is not bad, but I think the intention is the problem, was the problem for me there. The problem wasn't the $1 million house. The problem was my intention for wanting that $1 million house. And that's the thing that I think we need to check. So yeah, it's not the pursuit. It's the intention behind the pursuit that I think we really need to pay attention to.
Yeah, that's really well said. And it, you know, from looking at your resume and reading your book, it seems as if you've been around a lot of great leaders, even in places that you've worked. I mean, you worked at Tom's, you worked at Apple, and then you spent a lot of time until just recently working at StoryBrand with Donald Miller. I can imagine there was some tension there. You've got this amazing, charismatic leader, Don, who gets a lot of attention and who's leading really well. And certainly there's a desire there to be like, man, he's running the show, but you're in the background. Can you tell me more about there's some things that you learned through working at StoryBrand?
Yeah. And, you know, it's crazy how the people that we're exposed to allow us to start to shape what it is that we value. And what I love about Don is here's a guy who has achieved a lot of success. I mean, he's been, you know, sold millions of copies in his book, has led, you know, a multi-million-dollar business, in a lot of ways has just been thriving. But what separates him from a lot of people who have also achieved that kind of success is his mindset. And I feel like he's one who wants to help others win, right? So, you know, a StoryBrand, one of the big lessons is, you know, as a brand, don't be the hero, be the guide, right? Don't be Luke Skywalker, be Yoda. Mm-hmm. So how can you come alongside one of your customers as a business and do whatever it takes to help them win? So that philosophy was also one that I think Don operated out of. So it's hard to not be inspired by that, to see people like him and actually, you know, see him doing whatever he can to help other people win and be more interested in their revenue growth necessarily than his revenue growth. And there's also people like Scott Hamilton, who's a friend of mine. And, you know, here's a guy who's achieved, you know, so much success. He won a gold medal in figure skating, and yet he's one of the most humble, kind people I've ever met. So for me, as I look at how I want to live my life, it's people like that, that model for me what to do when you do have the success that culture tells us is success, right? When you do have the money, the fame, the power, what separates these guys that I just told you about is really their mindset. And, you know, when I talk about, and, you know, the subtitle of the book is Stop Chasing the Spotlight and Learn to Enjoy Your Work and Life Again. And in that subtitle, what I'm talking about is stop chasing the spotlight, the spotlight mindset that we were just talking about, right? Because these positions are not the problem. You know, Tim Cook, the guy's in the secret society. He's CEO of one of the largest companies in the world. And yet he models for us a very healthy, inspiring way and definition of success. And so I think for all of us, my hope is that we can see people like that and learn to identify, is that coming from a healthy place? You know, and I don't want us walking around judging everybody, but, you know, as I look at like a Tim Cook and you hear him say, you know, it's a moment for Apple. I don't really think about myself that much. when I hear something like that, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, secret society, whatever that guy is doing, I want to pay attention and learn to live and lead a little bit more like he is.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, it's really liberating hearing this stuff, because I think, I mean, as you mentioned in the book, and we've discussed, there's a very clear picture how a lot of us do define success for ourselves. And it seems almost unattainable. It seems like it will never really arrive. It's this weird thing. And if we just breathe a little bit, look around, serve the people around us, stop being so hard on ourselves, things will go a lot better.
Yeah. I'm at least going to take the chance that that's true, right? It's like, because that to me feels like the better path. And it's not the path for everybody, but for me, I get to live my life however I want. We're all on our own journey, right? And so to me, that just feels true to how I want to live. And I think for a lot of people, they're up against, you know, what I call lack of integrity. And there's a definition of integrity that's a little different from the one that most people think about. When most people hear integrity, they think of somebody who has good morals, good values, all those things. And that is true. That is integrity. But there's another definition of an integrity, and it says actually internal consistency. So I think for so many of us, we're not living in integrity. We're not living with internal consistency in how we're living and how we actually want to live, right? So when we hear these stories of people who are willing to give away the credit, there's something about us that's like, that just feels right. That feels true. And if then our action and behaviors aren't aligned with that, that's when we feel that rub. That's where we feel that tension, that lack of integrity. So what I'm trying to do as I, you know, live my next days, I'm trying to live in integrity with the part of me that aspires to be more like the people like Tim Cook, and just the decisions that I make. I want those things to be as congruent as possible.
That makes perfect sense. A quote that I really enjoyed in your book is, "Success is the process, not the result." And I love that. That I just finished reading Atomic Habits. That's what I read before you. I'm sure you've read that. Yes. And a lot of your book really aligned with the things that I learned from that book. And this idea of showing up and just moving forward and not quitting, that is success right there. And subscribing to positive behaviors and just continuing along, that is success, as opposed to some certain metric that we're trying to hit. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So there's a business book that I really like called The Four Disciplines of Execution. And in it, it talks about the difference between lead measures and lag measures, right? So, you know, a lag measure would be, you know, we're talking about a book here. So let's just use this as an example. A lag measure would be the number of books sold, right? Where a lead measure is something that would be behaviors and things that we can do to influence the number of books sold, right? And there are so many people in business and then also in life that get so caught up in the lag measure, the things that, you know, the final answer, the number, the salary that they have, the house that they, whatever. And, you know, what's most important is actually to think about all the things that you're doing to influence the life that you want to live. And, you know, so there's a quote from Steve Jobs, and I heard him say this when I was working at Apple. He said, "The joy is in the journey." And I just think that's for so many of us, we're so interested in the end result. We just want the thing, right? But we don't really acknowledge and lean into the journey itself, right? We're not focusing on the lead measures. We're only focused on the lag and our lack of having the lag that we ultimately want, right? We want the end. We don't want to have to navigate the means. And so when I hear Steve Jobs say something like "the joy is in the journey," it's really inspiring to me, because I think here's a guy who's had all of the success and is sitting here on the other side of it saying, yeah, but it's not the mountaintop. That's not it. Like, it's the journey that we all get to go on. And so that's really where that quote comes from. It's, you know, focus on the process, not the result. Let's spend more time thinking about how we show up, right? Like how we interact and live each and every day. Let's be more concerned about that. And, you know, trusting that the rest is going to take care of itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Something that was kind of a funny narrative that you wove through your book was your desire to be John Mayer. Can we get on that road a little bit?
I was going to be the next John Mayer, everybody. I was going to be it. And so when I was in college, that was, I started writing my first songs and I love John Mayer. And so I love having a bit of an aspiration, somebody that I can be like. And you know, I just really thought me in lights, that was going to be it. I even tried up for American Idol once, which I didn't write in the book, but I did try up for American Idol.
this is great.
And spoiler alert, guys, I did not become the next John Mayer. And in fact, after trying to do the music thing for a really long time, I hadn't, quote, made it. Like I hadn't become a full-time musician, which to me was how I defined success at the time. I wasn't selling thousands of copies of my records. I wasn't going on these national tours. And there was a time when I was pretty bummed out by that because here is my dream. I felt like I was doing everything that I could, all the lead measures that I could think of to get me to that end result. And it just still wasn't working for me. What was interesting though, is I would consider that one of my major failures, like by a lot of, you know, definitions that just didn't work. I invested a lot of time, money, energy into it, and it didn't happen for me. But in that, I was able to learn and navigate how it is that I did want to live, what it was that I was skilled at and, you know, maybe more equipped to do. And, you know, that me wanting to be John Mayer, even though I'm kind of bummed that it didn't work out, just because when you try at something, you want to succeed, right? And for me, I was just bummed that it didn't, I invested so much time, it didn't happen. But what I'm grateful for is what I learned from it. And, you know, so I was on this one tour with my friend Steve Mokler. And at the time, this is still when I was really, you know, knee deep into wanting to be a musician. And while I'm on this tour, here's this guy that went to the same college as I did, but he had all these fans that knew the lyrics to his songs. We'd be at shows that we'd play together and he'd sell 3 to 4 times as much merchandise as I did. And it just felt deflating. But what I found out later, as he and I have actually had years apart from that particular moment, I was the guy who organized all the details and the logistics of the tour. And that work actually was so easy for me. So he was actually feeling, you know, resentful and didn't like how he was comparing himself to my ability to organize and do the details and all that stuff. So it's so interesting how we're both sitting in different seats looking at the other as, you know, with a little bit of like, dang it, why? I wish I had more of that, right? So it's pretty cool how in the years that followed, I really started to lean into that whole idea of, you know, what if I were to manage the logistics for this kind of work and organize details and manage projects? And that just was really natural for me. And I was starting to get some momentum in that, you know, space. And I actually ended up becoming Steve's manager. So here he was the musician and I became his manager. And it was almost he and I then both operating out of our skill, like our skill set, our gifts. And it worked, right? When I just leaned into who it was that I was and what I was naturally wired for is when things really started to click for me. So I think the lesson for a lot of us is, you know, when C.S. Lewis says comparison is the thief of joy, I think he's right. And so I think it's really important as we're navigating our lives to just pay attention to, you know, maybe if you were up against some of these walls, maybe that's a way of, you know, us needing to learn to maybe try something a little bit differently. And so as I started working with Steve as a manager, I started to find a whole lot of meaning and fulfillment, the same amount of fulfillment when Steve would release a record as when I would release one on my own. And so that ultimately led me to coming alongside Don and working with him. And, you know, I spent 10 years working with Don as his right hand and we built a, you know, pretty cool company. And, you know, I feel like I've really found my purpose in life, the thing I'm passionate about is really coming alongside other people and helping them win. So I really see this book as another avenue that I'm chasing that same thing, which is how can I write down stories and ideas and things that I've learned and, you know, get it out to as many people as possible so that they don't have to make the same mistakes that I did. And, you know, maybe they can live more, you know, meaningful and successful lives as a result. So I'm still on that journey. I'm not the next John Mayer, but I'm grateful.
Got it. Well, you found your own way. And your time at StoryBrand is over. You're now going out on your own. Is that correct?
Yeah. So you and I are talking in March, but my last day with StoryBrand was February 1st. So I spent almost 10 years doing that. And the closer I got to my book coming out, the more I realized for me to do that really well, which is, you know, me launching my own podcast, me doing speaking and me being on other podcasts. Like there was just so much work that's required to, you know, launch a book well. And I knew that if I were to lean into that fully, I just was not going to be showing up at my full-time job, giving it 100%. And I just wasn't willing to do that. I didn't want either of these things to suffer. And so I felt like I was kind of up against an impossible decision, leave a dream job to go chase another dream. But that's kind of the path that I'm on. So when Don told the staff, when we let everybody know that I was going to be transitioning, he said, you know, Tim helped make my dreams come true. Now I want us to do everything that we can to make his come true. And so StoryBrand and Don and team launched me into this new life. And now I'm doing whatever I can to kind of spread the word about the Secret Society of Success.
I love it. That's interesting to have the support of a team like that. You know, as you step into, you know, your next role, I mean, it says a lot about Don too, that you've put your time in with him, you've done so much, and now he's really getting behind you. And I really love hearing that. Okay, a couple more questions for you. So we're going to get to the famous billboard question, famous to all 12 of my listeners. So the question is, if you could have a billboard up all over the world for 1 year, what would it say?
I think it would say, help others win. And the reason why is, I just think so many of us are really operating out of that what's in it for me mindset that we've talked about. We're so worried about our success and our path. But if there's a foundation, if there is a common denominator for people in the secret society, I would actually say it's serve others. It's a mentality of helping others win. So I think we need a little bit more of that. And if we're reminded driving past the billboard every day that said that, maybe it would be a really good reminder for us to show up a little bit differently.
Well said. And a question that's kind of similar is, how do you personally define success or a life well lived? And it may be the billboard question answer, but how do you know when you're looking at yourself, how do you say, hey, I'm doing a good job? How do you define success for yourself? I know that's kind of like what we've been talking about this whole time, but like, what tells you that you are where you need to be?
Yeah, I would say, you know, for me, success is living in the way of the secret society. And I think the fruit of that is able to be seen in so many different ways. I am now not somebody who has an unhealthy desire for attention and recognition. I'm not constantly raising my hand wanting, you know, people to notice me, but instead I'm focusing on doing the work. I'm recognizing people for what they're bringing to the table. I'm, you know, if I'm given credit for something, you know, I'm often probably going to be dishing out that credit and recognizing other people for their contribution. I'm, you know, helping others win, coming alongside them and, you know, giving of myself to help someone else. So I think for me, that really is it. That's the path that I want to head down, and it's how I want to keep showing up.
Perfect. Well, you've got a great message of encouragement that everybody needs to hear. And so your book is coming out. What's the launch date?
May 17th.
And where can people find out more about you and your book?
Yeah, secretsocietybook.com, thebooktarget.com, Amazon, wherever you buy books, but that would be the spot you'd go.
Okay, perfect. Anything else you want to add?
Hey, here we go. This was a bit of a North Star for me as I was writing this book, and I'll kind of leave y'all with this. Albert Schweitzer said, "I don't know what your destiny will be. Some of you will perhaps occupy remarkable positions. Perhaps some of you will become famous by your pens or as artists. But I know one thing. The only ones among you who will be really happy are those who have sought and found how to serve. That's it. That's the thing that I hope we all head towards.
That's a beautiful benediction right there. I feel like you just wrapped up a sermon. Oh, that was so good. Well, Tim, this has been really amazing, really insightful, and I'm really excited for people to hear this and for your book to come out. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
Man, thanks for having me. It's been so fun.
Awesome. See ya. Do you feel a bit lighter, a bit more free to slow down a little bit? Tim's idea of the secret society may sound obvious and trivial to some, but there are many of us who can't hear this message enough. The endless pursuit of more never stops unless we stop to evaluate what we're moving toward and at what cost. Perhaps setting up someone else for the spotlight is what we've been missing all along. Just some food for thought. Thank you so much for spending some time with us here today. If you enjoyed this episode, please tell a friend about us. We are brand new and would love your help to get these stories out. Also, don't forget to hit subscribe on iTunes or Spotify. To find out about upcoming episodes, follow us on Instagram at The Adventure Cure, or you can follow me at Rob Trepp. That's R-O-B-T-R-E-P-P. And also, if you want to see the show notes, visit robtreppendahl.com/podcast. That's robtreppendahl.com/podcast. Thanks so much, y'all.